Thank you for checking in with us pretty late. I'm a little amped because I'm in Springfield and I got to sit in the press box during the State of the State address. Rob, are you still hanging around in Esmeralda?
I'm right
is
here.
There?
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. I you know me. I'm a little bit I can cause chaos. I think ooh, hello.
See? Right there.
Yeah, look at that. I just kind of mess things up. I cause chaos and confusion everywhere I go. I had met with the press secretary yesterday, and like I told you, he said that the press boxes would be full. And today he said, but if you come early, we'll see what we can do. Maybe there'll be some standing room. And what I learned is that if you are on the floor of the House of Representatives and they're about to begin the prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance, no one is allowed to leave the floor. Only I had left all my things on the other side of the podium, including both of my phones. And I was told not to move, that I had to stand for the prayer, which is, you know, I'll stand for the prayer, but I'll tell you what I was praying the entire 2 minutes. Please don't let my phones ring. Please don't let my phones ring.
do you just have a regular ring, or is it a
no.
song?
Well, it depends on who's calling, right? So, like, for my husband, it's like, Kiss Me, I'm Irish. For my friend Charles, it's Bad Medicine. I'm just sitting there. I was like, the chances of that happening are like 100% that it would go off during the prayer or the Pledge of Allegiance. But fortunately, the prayer helped, I guess. State Senator Dan Katowski joins us on the line. How are you doing, Senator?
I'm doing well, Patty. How are you?
I'm good. I got to sit in the press box today. I miss you in Springfield. I know that you are doing something very important and a job that you're enjoying, but I've talked to many people who miss you very much down here.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. I miss a lot of my colleagues down there, a lot of really good people who care about the future of our state. So, you know, hopefully they'll be able to get the situation that we have down there resolved as quickly as possible.
Well, you served for 9 years. So did you see the 9 State of the State addresses? Were you present for? I know there are things that might draw you away from the Capitol during those days, but had you seen all of them?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I never missed one.
So missed the, one. You go ahead.
No, I.
Oh, it's an interesting day. You know, there's I was watching, and I know, so it's held in the House of Representatives, and then the senators are then ceremoniously invited in. The doors are closed, and then I guess they have to put a motion on the floor to allow you in. Is that correct?
Yes, it goes back to, it's back where they had to knock historically to get permission
yes.
to get into Parliament. And it's a very cool history there, and permission is granted for the governor to come in and give a State of the State. I have to say, those experiences were some of the ones that I really enjoyed the most because it should call and demand that, especially in that environment, that the greater angels of everyone comes out there, that we are expected to do our best on behalf of taxpayers and the people we serve. So when in that moment, that's why at times, like I was, you know, especially in Washington, when people would yell out when the president was speaking, that's so shocking to me that would ever occur, because even if I don't agree at all with what the mm-hmm. person is saying, right, I respect them and I respect the role. And I respect the fact that they've been elected by the people to serve. And this is their opportunity to present what they, what this person, like the governor right now, Governor Rauter, believes is the State of the State. And you have an opportunity, he has an opportunity to present that. And then we, as elected officials, have an opportunity to respond right afterwards.
Right.
You know,
right.
The press is there. And it's, but, you know, it's I think it speaks to the best representation in many respects of our government. And so, yeah, I've been through 9 of them. And each one I found to be very special in their own right.
Yeah, it was. I felt the same way too. I mean, you know, because I kind of have a different role, I'm a broadcaster and not a journalist. You and I have talked about this in my position sitting in the press box. And, you know, there is something to be said for sharing this story in a different way than perhaps the Tribune, the Sun-Times, any of the other radio stations that might, you know, it's funny. I'm not sure. What's the radio station that does Dave? I'm not sure what his name is, but he seems to be a permanent fixture in the press box there. He was broadcasting for the Illinois. Is it the, I'm trying to look at their microphone. It's like 1240 or something like that. And, you know, they have a very cynical take on the way they report it. I have a little bit of a personal interest because I really do want to hold the Illinois, you know, government accountable for how we treat our most vulnerable. And, you know, and everybody when it comes to education to, you know, for our progress, for our prosperity. But I tweeted out a couple of snarky things, and you know, I know that that's a little bit different, only because there was a moment, Senator, that just fell on my ear so hard. I'm not sure if you had a chance to hear before you came on tonight, but he addressed the expenses that DCFS have, and that we have spent tens of billions of dollars on a broken patchwork of reactive, expensive, and ineffective interventions. And to me, that just stood out so starkly. It wasn't about how we need to commit to helping our most vulnerable, how we need to help those who cannot help themselves. It was about how we have to focus on data-driven decisions, being able to keep more. It was more about outcomes, you know, sort of spreadsheet outcomes. And paying for value. And I was really surprised by that tone.
Here's what's interesting about that statement. I think it doesn't reflect the reality, because the one area in government over the past couple of decades that has had performance-based contracting is services for children who are wards of the state. There are very specific goals and measurements for length of stay in a residential treatment center, for therapeutic interventions, for if you're in foster care, for sibling visits. We have specific goals that we have to meet for our children in foster care in terms of reunification.
Right.
If you have reunified with family, or to legal guardianship, or getting adoption, and we have about 240 kids that we had in foster care last year, and 80 of them were reunified and adopted or placed or having permanent legal guardianship. So there's this goal that's out there. It's called permanency. But the point here is what's surprising about that statement is when you look throughout government, no other area of government has been so immersed in focusing on performance as it relates to funding than the Department of Children and Family Services. In fact, there's something called the Child Welfare Advisory Council, which is a group of providers which sit on this council, which help to inform and craft outcomes related to serving kids. And so I don't know what the governor is getting at, but it's one of the things that most people would not be aware of that. I mean, there used to be 55,000 children in care and foster care. 55,000, now it's down to about 15,000.
Right.
And it's so much more difficult to get into foster care. It's so important that the area that's focused on is making sure that children are moved out of foster care into permanent placement, right? And, some would, argue that is too much of a focus on that. But the fact is, providers have come together in conjunction with the government in a partnership with the public sector to achieve that. And so
right.
I don't know what the governor's hoping, but he may be talking about the area of the budget that was reduced significantly last year, funding for 18 to 21-year-olds, this redetermination of them and eliminating scholarships for them, eliminating transitional living for them, and cutting all those services for 2,400 young people ages 18 to 21.
Right.
And that was talked about last year in the budget. And I don't know what's presented. Maybe this is a precursor to that, but there was a tremendous amount of pushback on that front last year. But, when I hear that, that's my response when I hear
well,
that.
Yeah, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing. I know that you wanted to leave the Senate in order to help families in a more impactful way, directly be able to, you know, make the connection between government and service. And I have to run. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I know we usually get to spend more time hanging out. Perhaps next week we can catch up on what you've been up to.
Yes, please.
Sound good?
And take care of that cold you have.
Yeah. It's just been a long day, that's all. And before we let you go, your GoFundMe for the flooring for the girls' home, where can we find that?
GoFundMe, it's on Facebook, but you can go on GoFundMe and you look up Child Surf, CHILD, capital SERV. There's no E at the end because our work is not done. We've raised $765 to date towards $5,500 to get a new floor for our girls' home for they're adolescent girls, ages 13 to 18, who've dealt with a lot of trauma, and we're trying to make sure that they can heal and lead better lives.
Well, thank you so much, Senator. We will talk to you next week. You get some rest, too. I know we're both very busy. Everyone's busy. Everyone gets some rest. Just leave the radio on, that's all. Thank you so much. More after this on 720 WGN.